Josh and WZBU New Holstein Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a civic media station.
This is a special report from ABC News. New Orleans attack. I'm Richard Cantu. Federal investigators are rifling through Shamsuddin Jabbar's devices looking for clues in the New Year's night truck attack in New Orleans.
Born and raised in Texas, Jabbar spent more than a decade in the military, in HR and IT roles, but in recent years had been divorced at least three times and was facing financial challenges, drained of child support for his three children. Just hours before the attack, the FBI says Jabbar posted videos to Facebook where he openly discussed killing members of his own family, but apparently deciding that was not a big enough political statement.
ABC's Pierre Thomas. Families now mourning. Sherelle Jackson had the horrific duty of identifying her 37-year-old cousin, Reggie Hunter, killed in the attack.
I said a prayer before I got ready to go in, like, you know, God, give me strength to be able to do this, because I'm wanting to be strong.
New York City had some New Year's mayhem of its own. 10 people shot and wounded when, say, police as many as 4 gunmen opened fire on a group of people lined up outside a music hall. Police Chief of Patrol Philip Rivera says the wounds were all non-life-threatening.
There's zero tolerance for these senseless shootings, these horrible acts of violence on our streets. And those responsible for this crime will be apprehended and brought to justice.
President Biden bestowed the Presidential Citizens Medal on 20 individuals who've performed exemplary deeds of service.
On the list, former Republican Congresswoman Liz Cheney, who served as vice chair of the January 6th committee. The White House announcing the award says Cheney used her voice and reached across the aisle to defend American ideals of freedom, dignity, and decency. The president will also honor other former lawmakers and advocates and experts in law, health care, and education.
ABC's Karen Travers in Washington. I'm Richard Cantu. ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WISS News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anytime at the WISS website at WISS.FM.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin.
I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Matt Nair on air. This shouldn't be a thing.
Hot Dr. Pepper is the hottest holiday drink, but is it any good?
Jade, I'd like to answer that question.
Yes.
No. Have you ever had a hot soda in your life?
Yes, they're terrible. You can also do apparently 80% eggnog and 20% Dr. Pepper.
Get out of my country.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Three Packers named to the Pro Bowl. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The NFL says three Packers players selected for the Pro Bowl, two of them signed with the team this year in free agency. It's safety Xavier McKinney, running back Josh Jacobs. The third is defensive end Rashawn Gary. The Packers' top defensive back, Jaire Alexander, had to have surgery on his right knee and is now out for the rest of the season. This will mean more snaps for second-year man Carrington Valentine.
This is next man mentality, honestly. You know, it sucks, but play football. Injuries happen. You know, you got to keep going.
The Packers host the Bears Sunday. Quarterback Caleb Williams was asked what he thought about his former assistant coach at USC, Cliff Kingsbury, as a candidate for the next head coach of the Bears.
Yeah, I'd say I've been around Cliff. I know what type of guy he is. I know that he loves football. I know that he wants to win. He's a competitor. I've been around him, so asking him questions and things like that, I think, obviously, if he was here, I'd probably have more to say.
That's Bears quarterback Caleb Williams with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Tom Cruise is getting into the casting business. The Mission Impossible star is currently looking for a younger version of himself to play the role of Ethan Hunt. The next two installments of the franchise, those would be films 8 and 9, will be prequels. Rumor has it the 8th film will be Cruise's last on screen, but he will still continue to produce the franchise. Glenn Powell was initially rumored to take over the role, but those rumblings have recently been shot down. No word yet on whether or not Cruise will expect his younger self to do his own stunts. could be a deal breaker. Sticking with the action thriller genre, Viola Davis will play the president in the upcoming film G20. Variety reports the Oscar winner will play Commander-in-Chief Danielle Sutton, who narrowly avoids being kidnapped, then proceeds to save her family and the world. The film will be directed by Patricia Riggin and drop on Amazon Prime this coming spring. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Peach Wabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, maybe a few flurries, lows in the low teens. And a mostly sunny sky for tomorrow, highs upper teens to near 20. And staying in the upper teens to around 20 degrees for the weekend with a partly sunny sky. Low 20s to start next week. Currently 21 degrees.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, the Fox Valley's home of Mino and the Mayor.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Cody Cook, he didn't cut a gay man.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. We discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Chujunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, we are here with our friend Josie, and Josie Hoffman, artist, teacher, emerging curator. We are talking about the exhibit that's happening starting tonight. It's a new exhibit featuring at Native American Community Development Institute, All My Relations Arts Gallery. Welcome, and thank you for being on again.
Me gwich, thank you. Buju, Josie, Indigenous. Hi, I'm Josie, Grand Portage Band. I'm working on a show right now. And so Robert asked me to come on and talk about it.
Right on. Hey, so tell us about your art and tell us the name of the exhibit.
Yeah. Well, I'm a mixed media artist. I do things from painting to drawing, 3D works, beading. I'm also an aerialist and a powwow dancer. I'm currently working with Emerging Curators Institute and All My Relations Gallery. To work on this show that I've been curating called Nimi Win Bijinagigo Ingi Ajegue Ga Nime Ding.
Wow.
So that translates to everyone dance. I recently returned home from a powwow.
Well, congratulations on being the featured with the Native American Development Institute and being the curator. The opening day is tonight, right? And the gallery's at 1414 East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis.
Yes, and it opens at the opening reception's from 6 to 8. So
it's perfect. So people, you have time today to get over there and check it out. You know, what is some of the work that inspired you to do this, and how did you learn to go about making pieces of art?
Well, I've always been encouraged, like, by my mom. She always encouraged me to, like, create and make art. And I always try to surround myself with other artists, and I'm constantly inspired by other artists. So creating and being with creatives is just kind of a part of who I am and what I do. And I'm really excited about the artists that are going to be in the show. We have Stramasis, we have a photographer, we have powwow singers, jingle dressmaker. And these are all just really amazing artists. They're all really talented and really beautiful people, beautiful souls. So I'm really excited to be sharing the talented work that they do. So.
I know there's a miniature, a miniature kind of a display that was at the Wall of Forgotten Natives, and it was really cool. I got to take a look at that. Can you talk just a little bit about that?
Yeah, Courtney Cochran's piece. The original was on Franklin Ave at the Wall of Forgotten Natives, which was said never homeless before 1492. So she has a reproduction of it, a little smaller version that is fitting in the gallery that will be a part of the show. She worked with a lot of community members and community organizations to create the piece, and I'm really honored. And she's one of the artists that also is like part of the audio description too. So, yeah.
Right. And then I noticed too that there were some beautiful jingle dresses. Can you talk about that artist at all?
Yes, that's Adrienne Benjamin. She's a really talented jingle dressmaker from Mille Lacs, and she's showing the dream dress. And so she's got four of them, four colors, red, green, blue, and yellow.
Wow. And can you tell us a few more of the artists that are going to be there and what else is going to be in the exhibit? Because, again, I want to let everyone know tonight from 6 to 8 is the grand opening at 1414 East Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis at the All My Relations Art Gallery. And I know I'm going to be running over there right after the show.
Yes. So we've got the Stonebridge Singers drum from Grand Portage, Minnesota, and we've also got Chanel Gallagher, a ceramicist. We've got Courtney Leonard, who is also a ceramicist and installation artist, and then we have Michael Kurtz, who's a photographer. So those are all nice.
That's very cool. And how did you come up with all these artists? Is this the first thing you've curated?
This is actually the second thing I curated, but this is the first. So my first curation was actually at MIA. I did a curatorial case in the Native Art Department there, where I was just working in the collection. This is my first show where I get to work like more hands-on with the artists. Which has been like a really awesome experience. And these are just artists that I've been following or that I have known in the community. And I've been watching just do really amazing work. And I was like, hey, I would love for you to be a part of this show. And so it's been a really great learning experience and just navigating working with the gallery. I've been working with Angela Two Stars, who's been my mentor. And it's just been a really great experience. And I'm so honored that all these artists are trusting me to share their stories. So,
yeah. So what's the process? Do they propose pieces of art and then you kind of tell them how much room it is? Or do you ask for specific art pieces if they're available?
It depends on the show. For this show in particular, I had some ideas in mind. Like I knew I wanted to show Courtney Cochran's work. I knew I wanted to have a drum group in there. I knew I wanted to have a regalia maker in there. And then, for example, like Chanel Gallagher, she's doing really cool work with her tribe and collecting clay and being close to land. And that was part of the show too. So the show talks about dance, and it's about, like, it originates with the idea of dance, but also goes more into, like, the idea of movement and thinking about connections to land and community. So I kind of already had some artists and ideas and art pieces in mind. And so I approached the artists and I was like, would you like to be a part of this? I would be really honored. And they trusted me. So, yeah.
Well, that's exciting. Let's give the address one more time. And it's tonight, the opening. And what are the hours of the gallery? You can kind of stop in there and check it out after the opening, whenever the coffee shops open, right?
Yeah, whenever the coffee shops open. I forget what time they're usually open, but I believe it's Tuesdays through Saturdays that they're open. But the show itself is on view until January 18th.
Very cool. Well, Josie, thanks so much for coming on, and I'll see you soon. Everyone, get over there between 6 and 8 and meet the artist and meet Josie Hoffman, the curator at All My Relations Art Gallery in Minneapolis. A big peeny geeky for coming on.
Thank you, Robert.
We'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Unwanted sexting or photos, inappropriate jokes, even tickling or wrestling can feel like a violation. Catcalling, cornering, or groping, getting them drunk or high for sex, recording sexual acts without permission, hurting someone because of their sexual orientation, raping a family member, a child, a date, a friend, a stranger, purchasing a human being for sex. You make the choice every single time. Sexual violence is many things. Make a choice. Do not do it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
Hey, Cudahy, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. This is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm here to ask you for your support. Finding honest, Native-centered news is not easy. But with your support, we're able to provide accurate information about Standing Rock, Line 3, treaty violations, and COVID-19 in our Native communities. Please visit Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon and donate if you can. That's Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon. Pini Gigi, and thank you for your support.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native-owned J.S. Bean Factory off Randolph Avenue in St. Paul. Only the good stuff keeps us awake.
We are awake. Hey, we're here with Levi Brown, Minnesota Department of Transportation's Director of Tribal Affairs, and that's a mouthful. Hey, welcome back, Levi.
Thanks.
Yeah, I got a quick question. So is MnDOT currently hiring? And if they are, what are the positions and what counties are is MnDOT looking to fill some jobs?
So MnDOT is statewide, meaning that we have positions all over the, you know, Northwest region, Northeast region, Central Minnesota, Southwest, Metro, Southeast. And I think we have a wide range of positions. I mean, a lot of times people just think it's snowplow driving, maintenance work, mowing, but we have engineers, we have planners, we have GIS specialists, we have attorneys, we have, you know, political scientist majors like me. We have people who work in between governments. I mean, we just, our scope is so broad. And I think, you know, when you're looking at, you know, close to 5,800 employees, you can get the dynamics and the scope of how many different opportunities MnDOT has. I think what's really unique is that we also employ a lot of private industry. You know, we do millions of dollars of road projects all over the state. And, you know, those contractors are looking for tribal, you know, members and employees as well. So it's one of those things where we really do pride ourselves on being as a big economic driver in the state.
Yeah, that's exciting. And remind us, especially our maybe younger listeners or our family out there, you know, there's some great benefits to work for the state, as we like to call it when I was young, the state. Can you talk a little bit about that and how really cool it would be to work for MnDOT?
I am, again, just completely, you know, changed a lot of my mindset of the state government, working for the state. I mean, when I was really suspect going into the position, but I would be our top, you know, recruiter, you know, given an opportunity like this where, you know, the health, the insurance, the workplace, the environment. I think one of the things that I've learned, you know, working for MnDOT, how important it is to have a supportive environment, right, of where you work and you feel like you're valued. And I think when, you know, if you work for MnDOT, you're going to get that. You're going to get that feeling of family. I mean, most people who come and work for MnDOT, you know, they end up staying most of their careers. I mean, when I start with MnDOT, I'll be honest, and my commissioner's probably listening, but or could be, I only planned to come for a couple of years. I mean, I was just like, I just wanted to try something that, because I'd only worked my whole career for Leech Lake, and I wanted to try something different. So I had some work experience so I could say, I, you know, work somewhere else. And it's going on my seventh year. So Robert, yeah. I hope people, our listeners are there. If they got questions, reach out to me and or some of the other Indigenous Employee Resource Group members who are big advocates for our work as well.
Well, as you can see, really, Haley runs this show. So I want to be careful about this next question is like, how can people find out about current career openings in the Minnesota Department of Transportation other than Haley? Oh, wow.
So the best way, Robert, is to if you got your phone in front of you, computer, laptop, iPad, whatever, just Google Minnesota State Jobs and then look up MnDOT, Department of Transportation. And then there you can select the region you want to work in. You could select the type of area you might want to work in, depending on where your expertise is. And you can just monitor those positions. You can look at where we have openings. Or you can just Google Levi Brown MnDOT, and my contact info is there. Maybe we can share it on your Facebook, wherever it is, and people can just reach out to me. I can help guide them. I mean, as you can tell, Robert, I'm pretty sociable. I have no problem just talking to people. And I think, you know, I just want to try to help people, you know, take advantage of an opportunity to be part of that change we're talking about.
Yeah, that's awesome, Levi. You know, and that's a good relative to be helping people. And also, you know, communication is huge for us. And, you know, I'm really excited to hear about these things. And I, you know, I'm 63 years old, so I wish I would have heard about these when I was young and had a career and retired by the time I was 55 and, you know, hanging out, you know, at the lake house. Oh, wow.
Well, you ever get up to Leech Lake and Cass Lake there, Robert, you let me know, because you don't have to be 55 to come have a good time up there, relax and, you know, take in all the activities up there.
Yeah, let's switch gears just for a second, because really, you do have the best wild rice. I do have to say that, because at Native Roots Radio, we have a Native Roots trading post at the State Fair and at Shakopee Poway, blah, and we sell that and people love it.
So just so you know, I have to build relationships with all 11 tribes. So, I will be, they at least know where my heart is and they know what I'll say where I do rice. But yeah, I agree, Robert. I'm not going to hold back.
Heck, you know, we got to have you on the show more often, and then Haley and I will get up there when it's ricing season and get in that canoe with you.
Well, just for FYI. So I also serve on the Natural Resource Advisory Committee for Leech Lake, and we have our first ricing committee meeting tonight. So once I get off of this interview, I'm actually going to go over and get on that call, and we'll be setting our hunting and fishing dates for Leech Lake, and then also start talking about our rice beds and which ones will be there. So we're only a couple weeks away, Robert.
Wow, that's cool. You know, Ho-Chunk coming up there to Leech Lake, that's very cool. Sounds very cool.
Well, and, you know, one thing about Leech Lake is, you know, they have exclusive jurisdiction over wild rice. So whether you're a tribal member or a non-tribal member, everybody's got to go to the Division of Resource Management for Leech Lake to get a permit. And I think one of the things that I feel fortunate about is just about how blessed that Monoman is. That's the abundance that's up there. And, you know, you can feed yourself with one handful each day.
Wow, really good. And remind our listeners, because we have listeners all over the state and state of Wisconsin, talk about the Ojibwe legend of finding food floating on ground.
So our ancestors were on the east coast, and you know that our legends talk about these seven places along the journey along the Great Lakes, but then we'll reach a place where the food grows on water. And if you ever see a wild rice, you know, see rice or rice bed, you know, it's something to really be something beautiful, something that where you're sitting there and you want to heal yourself and feel good, knowing that that's there and the creators put that for you there to eat, feed yourself and you know, heal your body and your spirit. Just go look at a rice bed, especially coming up in the next few weeks, because it just the wind blows a little bit and just waves at you. Those rice heads are just there. It's a wonderful sight, especially when you see rice poles go through it and you see Nijis out there, you know, friends out there, and people are other human beings out there gathering it.
Wow. Well, we're with Levi Brown, Minnesota Department of Transportation's Director of Indian Affairs. Before I forget, that's how to get a hold of you and what the website is, so our listeners out there that were driving and now pulling over with their pens can write this down, because they might be like me, where I have a good memory, but it's short. Ooh.
So the best way to do it is just tribesintransportation.com. It'll bring you right to our, you know, Office of Tribal Affairs from MnDOT. We kind of coined that Tribes and Transportation because we're kind of early in the game. At the same time, you can find my cell phone and my contact number online in that same website, and I can help guide you to any employment opportunities or questions you might have, or just in general what MnDOT does. And, you know, I hope this, everybody listening is, I hope my phone blows up a little bit. Let's put it that way. I get some phone calls of people interested.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, I want to get my young Chujunk here on in the last couple minutes. Haley, who's a Gen Zer, do you have any questions? Because this is amazing for an old person like me to hear that MnDOT has a liaison, a tribal liaison, and reaching out specifically to the Native community. That just blows my mind.
Yeah, it's really important that we kind of go back and redevelop these relationships with state officials and state government offices. I remember we had Wobbin on last year from MnDOT, who gave a really great interview. And I was just so surprised at the many different job positions that are available. Can you repeat some of those?
So we're more than just snow plows and maintenance and plowing. You know, we're bridge inspectors, we're, you know, GIS specialists, you know, Office of Land Management, surveying engineer, you know, engineers for whether it's, you know, civil engineering or we also have a need for computer specialists. You know, our office minute, who takes care of our technology. We have attorneys, position for attorneys, mapping specialists. And we actually have an office for kind of which I think is I'm very proud of, but our office that works with civil rights and, you know, looking after our veterans and other groups to make sure that, you know, our contracts and how we do our business and work. I think those are all unique opportunities that, you know, pretty fortunate to have that under one umbrella.
Wow. Good question, Haley. Wow. We're really fortunate to really amplify this this message out there, because, again, this is like really a beautiful thing that the state's doing, and I feel really good about amplifying your message, Levi.
And again, I think, you know, what's really unique is where I'm at right now. I'm up in Grand Portage, up at the north eastern part of.
This is the Fox Valley's Real News and Great Conversation, WISS.
This is a special report from ABC News. New Orleans attack. I'm Richard Cantu. Federal investigators are rifling through Shamsuddin Jabbar's devices looking for clues in the New Year's night truck attack in New Orleans.
Born and raised in Texas, Jabbar spent more than a decade in the military, in HR and IT roles, but in recent years had been divorced at least three times and was facing financial challenges, drained of child support for his three children. Just hours before the attack, the FBI says Jabbar posted videos to Facebook where he openly discussed killing members of his own family, but apparently deciding that was not a big enough political statement.
ABC's Pierre Thomas. Families now mourning. Sherelle Jackson had the horrific duty of identifying her 37-year-old cousin, Reggie Hunter, killed in the attack.
I said a prayer before I got ready to go in, like, you know, God, give me strength to be able to do this, because I'm wanting to be strong.
Enjoying this local program?
Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Three Packers named to the Pro Bowl. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The NFL says three Packers players selected for the Pro Bowl, two of them signed with the team this year in free agency. It's safety Xavier McKinney, running back Josh Jacobs. The third is defensive end Rashawn Gary, the Packers' top defensive back. Jaire Alexander had to have surgery on his right knee and is now out for the rest of the season. This will mean more snaps for second-year man Carrington Valentine.
This is next man mentality, honestly. You know, it sucks, but play football. Injuries happen, you know, you got to keep going.
The Packers host the Bears Sunday. Quarterback Caleb Williams was asked what he thought about his former assistant coach at USC, Cliff Kingsbury, as a candidate for the next head coach of the Bears.
Yeah, I'd say I've been around Cliff. I know what type of guy he is. I know that he loves football. I know that he wants to win. He's a competitor. I've been around him, so asking him questions and things like that, I think, obviously, if he was here, I'd probably have more to say.
That's Bears quarterback Caleb Williams with Sports on Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Hollywood has a reputation of being progressive, but as a recent drill down would indicate, that isn't always the case. According to Variety, despite women directing some of 2024's critically acclaimed hits like Baby Girl, The Fire Inside, and The Substance, overall, women directed just 16% of the 250 top-grossing films from last year. That is about the same percentage as 2023. When you drill down even further, women directed only 11% of the top 100 grossing films from last year. 23-year-old music phenom Billie Eilish had the most streamed song of 2024. The song Birds of a Feather off Eilish's third album, Hit Me Hard and Soft, was streamed over 1.75 billion times on Spotify. The song was written by Eilish and her brother Phineas. Birds of a Feather has been nominated for three Grammy Awards, including Song of the Year, Record of the Year, and Best Solo Performance of the Year. Looks like I got shut out again. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly cloudy tonight, maybe a few flurries, lows in the low teens. And a mostly sunny sky for tomorrow, highs upper teens to near 20. And staying in the upper teens to around 20 degrees for the weekend with a partly sunny sky. Low 20s to start next week. Currently 21 degrees.
When severe weather hits and the power goes out, do you have a plan? For reliable power and peace of mind, propane can do that. It only takes about 10 seconds for a propane-powered generator to restore power to your home. So no matter what Mother Nature has in store, you know you're prepared. Learn more at WIPGA.org. This message is sponsored by your local propane provider and the Wisconsin Propane Education and Research Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
What's going on in Washington today as we move into 2025? Have your antenna up. Don't rely on all the media sources. Just your own wisdom, your own heart, your own gut. Listen to what they're saying about our friends and neighbors and family. Because we innately know these people that we live with every day in our communities. Don't allow words and thoughts to tear us apart. Hold fast to that which we know, which is good.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2. On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Well, Haley, we have an awesome guest on today, Mary Mazzio, and we're going to be talking about the Bad River film documentary. And Mary, thank you so much. You directed and wrote this documentary, and it's just a beautiful piece of art and work, and what a great message. Thank you so, so much for coming on to Native Roots Radio.
Oh, listen, it's my pleasure, and I'm humbled to be here with you, Robert. Thank you so much.
Well, Haley and I watched it, not together, but we definitely watched it, and Haley's got some great notes on this, and I know, you know, Haley, your favorite part was the last 10 minutes, 5 minutes, and it was emotional. Haley, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, so we can give a little preview of what the film that we're talking about. This is the Bad River film documentary narrated by Quanah Chasing Horse and Academy Award nominee Edward Norton, written and directed by award-winning filmmaker who we're joined with right now, Mary Mazzio. Bad River is a documentary film which chronicles the Wisconsin-based Bad River Band and its ongoing fight for sovereignty. This is a story which unfolds in a groundbreaking way through a series of shocking revelations, devastating losses, and a powerful legacy of defiance and resilience, which includes kind of that David versus Goliath, to quote, kind of battle to save Lake Superior. So this is a really great documentary, very educational, and everyone, you know, needs to see it. Mary, where can people find this documentary right now?
So right now, if you're an Xfinity member, we're streaming on Xfinity. We will be debuting this fall on Peacock. So it will have a very wide release this fall. In the meanwhile, special events are happening. If any of your listeners are interested, badriverfilm.com/dates. We've got upcoming events where you can stream it. And so lots of events and activities are happening around the film. We're actually, thank you for that question, Haley. We're actually just out of theaters, and the film lasted amazingly almost 2 months in 25 major markets, which is like a huge feat for an indie documentary. So we're really excited about the reception that the film has had and the impact that the project is having kind of in real time.
Yeah, I know it showed up here in Minneapolis, and there was a big buzz, and people were asking me if we watched it, if we saw it. I'd run into people, and that's exciting. You know, we have our Enbridge story here in Minnesota, and so we can relate. One of the really, really awesome things about this documentary for me was that you really put a lot of the Native story surrounded by this pipeline action.
Thank you. And honestly, that I can take no credit for that, quite honestly. When we began interviewing Bad River elders, it was really extraordinary because they said, oh yeah, we'll talk about this current pipeline challenge that we're facing with a pipeline that's now at risk of rupture that cuts through the heart of our reservation. But did you hear about the fight we had a few years ago over the mountaintop removal mining project in the Pinokies? And then it was like, well, did you hear about the train loads of sulfuric acid that were going to come across rickety train tracks? And did you hear about this? And did you hear about that? And all of these stories of resistance came really tumbling out. And so the film meandered, just like the Bad River is meandering. And the film really went from, you know, a story about the pipeline crisis to one that became just this historical retrospective of defiance and resilience. And I'll tell you, Robert, I started getting chills when some of the elders were recounting these stories because it was so exciting to understand in real time the history of resilience.
Yeah, and resistance. You know, American Indian Movement started here in Minnesota, and I know you had a really nice piece about that in the starting and how the resistance and resilience of our relatives here in the Twin Cities, which we have the largest Native American population in the country. And so the movie was here for a week, and there was nothing but raves here, and I can't wait to see it again on Peacock.
And it was actually, Robert, it lasted more than a week in Minnesota. I think we were there for almost 6 weeks because AMC Cinemas, like, they called us up and they said, guess what? We're extending. Guess what? We're extending again. So, you know, to have that sort of receptivity for a film like this has just been, you know, humbling in so many ways. And by the way, you know, credit where credit is due, I had an extraordinary team that included Allison Abner. Allison is a writer. She was a writer for Narcos and West Wing. And she hails from the Stockbridge Muncie Band. So she had this amazing and acute awareness and understanding of Native history generally. But she was so thoughtful and disciplined from a storytelling standpoint.
Well, when it comes to storytelling, too, I never heard this, but it really put a big smile on my face. And a lot of it has to do with Native American interpretation, but also our sense of humor. When things would happen, the quote was, when things would happen, an eagle would land on the moon. And finish that story. That was amazing.
That was outrageous. So I think it was Edith Leoso that was recounting to me, you know, she was talking about the birth of the American Indian Movement, of course, AIM, and other groups that began to really lead the way in terms of what does it mean to have tribal sovereignty? And what do you mean you're not going to honor our treaties? And what does this mean about the land that we're legally entitled to? And so she recounted this story, this prophecy that a great day will come for Native peoples when the eagle lands on the moon. And she said, and of course we all knew the eagle is never going to land on the moon. Well, guess what happens, right? With Apollo, I think it was Apollo 11.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course you have the classic, you know, crackle, crackle of the mic and, you know, the eagle has landed.
Yeah. And then they took notice to that and really got busy.
And they got busy. That's exactly right. And you had this unleashing of activism and awareness, which was really, really exciting.
Well,
and
back up just a little bit too about our history. And, you know, history has not been, the history books have not been good to Native Americans in films. But, you know, just to back up with it, you put all this history compacted in a beautiful way, told in a beautiful way about boarding schools, about, you know, the BIA and about the struggles that we've had as Native Americans being the first people here.
And, you know, again, that was really driven by Bad River elders and the stories that they wanted to tell. And I think, you know, certainly as a non-Native, bearing witness to these stories for me was so eye-opening, particularly from a value standpoint. And when you step back, you know, the Bad River people, time and time again, like Native people everywhere, history has been written in such a way where it is, you know, the cowboy that prevailed, right? The founding of the West. And in fact, you know, how history has been written has been woefully misinformed. And I don't know how history could have or has been taught without the history of Native peoples. And so I think the film has been so illuminating, especially for non-Native students. We do know of many, many school districts that are busing their children into theaters to see Bad River on the big screen. And, you know, as a filmmaker, that is so exciting because it means a new generation of young people can have better awareness and be much more fully educated about the issues that affect Native peoples in this country that are ongoing, as you well know.
Well, and one of the issues, too, is that we are dual citizens. I mean, a lot of people, not that many people are on the reservation. Like, for instance, Red Lake, half of their 17,000 tribal members live in the Twin Cities and the other half live on reservation. So we're not these reservation people. And we're proud of both. Being a dual citizens. We're proud of both of our countries that we're in.
I think that's exactly right. And certainly as it relates to Bad River, I mean, again, if you step back, you look at this really small group of people, and with monumental effort, they are fighting to protect Lake Superior, which of course is one of the world's most precious resources. But you see these fights playing out everywhere across America, led by Native citizens. And what struck me, especially as a non-Native, was this idea, and it's something that the Bad River former chairman Mike Wiggins said to me just a few weeks ago. He said, look, this fight, we're not fighting to protect Lake Superior just for us, but we're protecting Lake Superior for the country with increasing, you know, weather unpredictability. Extreme weather, there is going to be a dire necessity for more of the country to draw on Lake Superior for fresh drinking water. And he said, we're fighting at huge personal cost, this pipeline that is at risk of rupture, and we're doing it because it's our patriotic duty.
Mm.
And that just struck me like a ton of bricks. And I thought to myself, you know, just that value system, we are doing this for all of us, is so antithetical to so many of us that are, you know, rugged individualists or pull yourself up by the bootstraps and I need my package yesterday. And right, like if we could as a country be more thoughtful of community in the way the Bad River people and other Native peoples are, boy, we would be making America great again.
Yeah, perfect. Hey, we are here with Mary Mazzio, the director of an award filmmaker, and we're talking about Bad River, but we're talking about a lot of things that have to do with this documentary, this great documentary, and we're going to, you know, talk a little more. We're so, so excited to have you on. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back after this short break. Hey, Cudahy, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. This is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm here to ask you for your support. Finding honest, Native-centered news is not easy. But with your support, we're able to provide accurate information about Standing Rock, Line 3, treaty violations, and COVID-19 in our Native communities. Please visit Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon and donate if you can. That's Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon. Pinigigi, and thank you for your support.
Unwanted sexting or photos, inappropriate jokes, even tickling or wrestling can feel like a violation. Catcalling, cornering, or groping, getting them drunk or high for sex. Recording sexual acts without permission. Hurting someone because of their sexual orientation. Ripping a family member, a child, a date, a friend, a stranger. Purchasing a human being for sex. You make the choice every single time. Sexual violence is many things. Make a choice. Do not do it.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Oh!
Wow, we are kicking butt here on Native Roots Radio. We have Mary Mazzio, a director and writer of the documentary A Bad River, and we are just touching the surface here of this great documentary that can be seen soon on Peacock and in November 1st. Welcome back, Mary, and I want to kind of direct this question about the crust of the documentary, and then talk about the importance about, you know, addressing this Enbridge thing and their pipeline struggle with Line 5. We've had it here, and the Bad River Reservation in northern Wisconsin is really being attacked by a foreign company with lots of money.
Yes, and I think, you know, the challenge is that Line 5 cuts through the heart of the reservation, directly bisects the Bad River Band's land. And it is today, as the lower court, federal court Judge Connolly found, at imminent risk of rupture. That is terrifying because it means in a matter of hours, if there is a rupture, there is a catastrophe for Lake Superior. And I think, notwithstanding the many talking points that one often hears about this story, there are two really important facts. One is that a series of rights that Enbridge had to operate this pipeline across the reservation over about 3 miles expired 10 years ago. In other words, they no longer have the legal right to operate the pipeline. I think that's really important to know, in addition to the pipeline today being at profound risk of rupture. The second point, and this often gets lost, this is not a story about oil or about how many consumers and Canadian consumers are dependent upon this oil. This is a pipeline that moves oil from Western Canada to Eastern Canada. How it came to dip down into the United States when it was constructed in the 50s is really fascinating. But long story short, it was cheaper and easier to construct the pipeline through the United States than directly west to east in Canada. So in any event, you know, the Bad River Band has not benefited in any material way from the existence of this pipeline. The first 40 years were effectively free to the company to operate. But at the end of the day, I mean, we as a country, we're net exporters of oil. This has nothing to do about, really, this is not a story about oil at all. Mm-hmm. There are many, many ways to transport oil. And this is a story about a piece of aging infrastructure operating really in a place where it never belonged in the first place and where it no longer has the legal right to operate.
Wow, absolutely. And, you know, we talk about, especially when we were fighting Dakota Access Pipeline and Line 3 here in Minnesota and the Dakotas, we talk about the Kalamazoo rupture that, you know, pipelines leak, period. That's all we know. And sometimes we don't hear about them, and sometimes it's catastrophic.
Well, and I think that's a really interesting point that you bring up. I mean, Kalamazoo and the epic disaster, it was line 6A and 6B that were Enbridge lines that that ruptured. I think it was the costliest inland oil spill in the history of America. And that, of course, was not very far away from the Bad River Band. And so the Bad River Band hears about Kalamazoo, and all of a sudden there's a conversation. Well, wait a minute. Aren't we sitting on Enbridge lines? Isn't that who's right? But, you know, aren't those lines right beneath our feet? Mm-hmm. And Enbridge, of course, their rights expired only two years after Kalamazoo. So Kalamazoo was fresh in the minds of the tribal council. And as elders recall and former tribal council members recall, they started asking the company very difficult questions. How old are these lines? Right? Today, the line is 70 years old, 71 years old. How safe is it? What's your data? You keep coming onto the reservation to do what you call anomaly digs. What's an anomaly? Why are you doing these digs? What are you doing when you do these digs? And as elders recall, there was a lack of transparency from the company in terms of what was truly happening, which led them to this confrontation in the first place, where they said, you know, you're asking us for a right to extend your operations here on the reservation, and we are not going to agree to that. And that was the opening salvo to this battle.
Yeah. Wow. You know, I have to say something too about this documentary, watching this. This is like one of the most beautifully shot and edited documentaries I've ever seen, even if it wasn't about what it's about with the content. I was just amazed by the beauty of the shots that you and your editor chose to take, along with the talking heads, of course. But there's some beautiful shots there, and some vintage footage of like an Enbridge commercial, and it's an amazing visual documentary too. I just gotta say that.
Oh, thank you for that. And you know, many people don't really realize sort of what goes into the making of these, but from a production standpoint, as you can imagine, given the remoteness of the area, right, it took a lot of people, you know, you got to house and feed them. And right, so we had a small, you know, village of people working on this, including, by the way, a number of Bad River members themselves. And we had, we shot on the Alexa, which is a sort of, you know, major Hollywood films are shot on the Alexa. We had drones, we had 4K drones. We lost one into the Bad River, which was, I think Chaz Connors tried to come to the rescue with a whole team of people, you know, diving into the Bad River looking for that missing drone. But we, you know, sort of my going in attitude is, you have these extraordinary people fighting for something that is much bigger than all of us. And the visual story should reflect that sort of heroic and valiant effort.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Haley, we only got a couple minutes left here. I know you watched it too. What is your feeling, and do you have any questions for Mary before we end this great segment?
Yeah, I mean, the whole documentary was just an amazing piece of work, and including the visual shots, but also the soundtrack and the opening scene with the drum, and it just really draws you in right away. And I really appreciated the fact that you touched on a lot of subjects, like kind of how Allotment Act and how forced assimilation to larger cities kind of, you know, led to higher rates of substance abuse and the opioid epidemic, and also touched on crime and police brutality. So, I mean, all in all, the whole documentary is just, everyone needs to see this. So again, can we shout out kind of the platforms and where people can see this Bad River documentary?
Yes. So as I mentioned, we're just out of theaters, but people can view the film. If your listeners go to badriverfilm.com/dates, then we've got all kinds of events happening around the country. We have where you can personally stream it. The film will launch publicly onto a larger platform beginning on November 1st with Peacock, and our friends at Comcast, NBC Universal have been really extraordinary in terms of their support of the project. And so, we would be thrilled for your listeners to see the film. And then if they're so moved to take action, we do have a take action button as well on our website, and ways you might consider donating to support the Bad River Band.
Wow, perfect. Mary Mazzio, Bad River documentary. Thank you so, so much for being on Native Roots Radio. We got to do this again real soon.
Oh, Robert and Haley, thank you so much for having me. It's been a privilege, and really appreciate your thoughtful questions.
Right on. Hey, if you're listening to the show, you're part of the resistance. From Chief Plenty Coops, the ground which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office, vote, vote, vote. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
And free Leonard Peltier now.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for Matt and Air on Air.
Oh, Hi, I'm Michael Friedman, CEO of Simple Life Hospitality. Let us take the hassle out of vacation rental property management. We'll maximize your earnings and handle every detail from cleaning to maintenance and repairs. For guests, enjoy a stay that feels like home with hand-selected properties, personal touches like local recommendations, and extras like concierge service that will make your trip unforgettable. Whether you're a homeowner or a traveler, experience the Simple Life. Visit SimpleLifeRentals.com.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. This is WISS Berlin Oshkosh and WZBU New Holstein Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Richard Cantu. Postal worker murdered. It happened here in New York City. The man getting food from a delicatessen. There was a dispute.
According to police, it was an on-duty postal worker who was stabbed. Officers responded, found that postal worker, a 36-year-old man, stabbed multiple times and slashed in the torso, arms, back, and neck. This appears it had been a verbal dispute that turned physical. The 24-year-old person of interest was taken into custody. He's a man who has no obvious criminal record. We are told a weapon has been recovered.
ABC Safan Kim. As the investigations continue, authorities in New Orleans and Las Vegas say it appears the military veterans in the truck attacks were the only ones involved in the separate incidents, and they don't appear to be connected. The electricity is back on in downtown Omaha. Gas mostly restored after a sanitation truck got stuck in a sinkhole in an alley where utility lines were exposed. This is ABC News.
Lisa Hale with WI.